This year marks the 50th anniversary of a decision that ended a perilous chapter of the Cold War. In 1968, the Pentagon halted a program that kept military planes in the air 24/7 loaded with nuclear bombs to deter a Soviet attack. The problem was the planes kept having near-catastrophic accidents. Jay Price reports for WUNC's American Homefront Project.
To understand why those bombs were being flown around, you have to consider the national mindset back then. Here's a U.S. government film.
Let's face it. The threat of hydrogen bomb warfare is the greatest danger our nation has ever known. Enemy jet bombers carrying nuclear weapons can drop bombs on any important target in the United States.
The thing is, the Russian jets we feared so much never dropped nuclear bombs on us. But we were so worried about them that we kept dropping bombs on ourselves.
Yeah, two bombs. Two warheads, I understand.
In 1961, a B-52 bomber from nearby Seymour Johnson Air Force Base came apart in the sky over Earl Lancaster's farmhouse near Goldsboro. One bomb floated down gently on a parachute.
Huge parachute, hanging in a tree. Of course, they come got that one pretty quick.
It came startlingly close to detonating. A secret government document said three of the bomb's four safety mechanisms failed, and only a simple electrical switch prevented catastrophe. It could have instantly killed thousands of people. A second bomb buried itself in a tobacco field. The military put around-the-clock guards all over the neighborhood and dug for months, recovering some parts, but not the nuclear core. Now, you might think that that would be the only time the Air Force accidentally bombed its own country with an atomic weapon. Unless you drive a bit south, near Florence, South Carolina, and park in front of Mari Sanders' house. Then walk into the scrub oak and brambles behind his backyard to a water-filled round pit the size of a small house.
Well, it's the hole from where the bomb had dropped years ago.
The nuclear core, at least according to most reports, wasn't in that bomb, but the conventional explosives used to trigger it destroyed a farmhouse and injured half a dozen members of the family who lived there. And then, if you head south to the next state, Georgia, in 1958, an Air Force bomber damaged in a training flight jettisoned a nuclear bomb into coastal waters near Savannah. It was never found. Other bombs fell from the sky, and there were other accidents with nuclear weapons, too. The military's name for serious nuclear weapons mishaps is Broken Arrow. Nuclear analyst Steven Schwartz.
The Pentagon has only ever officially acknowledged 32 Broken Arrows, but there is evidence compiled by the government itself that shows that there were thousands and thousands of these accidents over the years.
He says a wave of serious accidents in the late 1950s through 1968 was partly due to programs that kept the U.S. on a war footing. A few planes were kept aloft 24 hours a day, ready to drop bombs on Russia.
It seems like once a week or so, there was some kind of significant, noteworthy accident that was being reported to the Department of Defense or the Atomic Energy Commission or members of Congress.
And then there was the sheer number of weapons being made. More stuff to have accidents with. Schwartz says by the time the bomb fell on South Carolina, the U.S. was making nearly 3,000 nuclear weapons a year. The causes of individual accidents were sometimes almost silly. That's perhaps the most famous movie nuclear weapon scene. The actor Slim Pickens in Dr. Strangelove fiddles with the release mechanism of a bomb, then gleefully rides it down to its target. That couldn't happen, of course. Except the South Carolina accident happened when a fumbling crewman hit the wrong switch and started to fall out with the bomb. He only grabbed a handhold at the last instant. Another accident happened after a crewman put seat cushions on a hot air vent. They started a fire and the crew had to bail out.
Everything associated with nuclear weapons, the weapons themselves, the command and control systems that make sure that they go off when they're supposed to, and most importantly, that they don't go off when they're not supposed to, all of these things are designed, built, operated, and maintained by human beings, and human beings are fallible.
It wasn't the bombs we dropped on ourselves that finally ended the airborne alert program, but two accidents over friendly nations. In 1966, a B-52 bomber, also flying out of Seymour Johnson, broke apart in the sky near the coast of Spain. One of its bombs dropped into the sea, and three fell on land, where conventional explosives scattered radioactive material. Then came the burning seat cushion crash that spread plutonium and uranium onto sea ice and into the sea off the coast of Greenland.
It was immediately after that accident that Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara canceled the airborne alert program. He'd seen enough, and he decided that the risks were just too great, both the risk of an actual accident, but also the negative publicity.
So the program officially ended in 1968, a decision made easier by the Pentagon's growing reliance on missiles launched from land or submarines.
Of course, no nuclear weapons accident ever resulted in the actual detonation of a nuclear warhead or bomb. And for that, we can be grateful to our engineers that designed these weapons and built in a number of safety systems. But we also have to give a lot of credit to just plain old dumb luck.
If you know where to go, you can still see reminders of the time when we kept bombing ourselves, as a few dozen curious tourists do each year at Maurice Sanders' house in South Carolina.
I think it's on some kind of map or something, because sometimes you see people with paper in their hand, like maybe they may have downloaded something, or, you know, their travel. Then some just park right there and just walk on back, you know.
Where they see evidence of just how lucky we were. Jay Price, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.